So is Diane Katz, too, along with Bob White. But Diane Katz is the Director of Science, Environment, and Technology Policy for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, talking about several things going on in their new magazine, Michigan Science. Pretty interesting discussion on deer camp and so forth. It'll be interesting to see what the harvest numbers look like this time, Diane.
Yeah, I think they're hoping for a higher turnout than in previous years, and but a little less than half of the hunters who get out into the woods actually bag a buck, if you will, and that's not too bad in Renaud, but that one of the things that some groups say contribute to the reduction in the number of hunters is that you don't always get one. You go out there and there's no guarantees, and you can spend a lot of time out there. But, it can also be, there are also other, benefits and pleasures other than actually, bagging the deer. If I might, I want to just mention to your listeners some of the other articles that are in this latest edition, because they may find a couple of those interesting as well. We have a story about the Mackinac Bridge, which is enjoying its 50th anniversary this year, and it really is an engineering marvel. And we talk about in the magazine, all of the advances in bridge work that the Mackinac Bridge represents. And there's an article about the Great Lakes and lake levels, and it's an excerpt of a study done by the U.S. Geologic Survey, and it found that, in fact, changes or fluctuations in lake levels have been going on for, thousands of years, and the current fluctuation is well within what is a normal variation in lake levels. And pretty interesting stuff from the federal researchers.
Let me throw you something by that. Are you still there? Did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay, I thought I heard you. I heard the phone going go down. I'm like, oh, no.
No, I'm not going anywhere.
Wanted to throw this by you. I mean, as you know, this ties in exactly, maybe not exactly with the article, but certainly with the concept of what you're talking about. And it's Bill Richardson's big comment that he wants to put pipelines into the Great Lakes and pump some of the Great Lakes water to serve water needs out west. I mean, I've heard two arguments of that. One is you're messing around with our Great Lakes, and you're going to screw up our tourism, and we're going to drain the Great Lakes and all this other stuff. And then the other side said, no, you've got so much water you don't know what to do with. If you took that and spread it across the entire continental United States, that you would end up having 9 feet of water over every square inch of land. I mean, so where's the real truth to all this, and who's right and wrong?
Well, the truth is there is a lot of water in the Great Lakes. I mean, there is a lot of water. But logistically, I would think it very unrealistic to think that we're going to get pipelines across the country, dumping water from Michigan into Arizona. Part of the problem with the western states and their shortage of water is that, many of these communities were built up based upon government policies that, drew people where you wouldn't ordinarily find or wouldn't expect to find, farming, for example. I mean, why should we be growing cotton in the desert? And, to a certain extent, there was a westward expansion, and the government had an interest in, developing and creating an agricultural industry. But, I'm really wary of government plans to redistribute natural resources, because typically what we've seen is that, they're ill-conceived and they ultimately don't work and end up harming the environment more than helping.
Well, it seems to me if they were going to do something like this and spend the kind of money and resources necessary to do these things, that long term they'd be a lot better off looking at desalinization of seawater.
Exactly.
And shorter pipe, better the technology exists today, and I'm sure if the Saudis can do it, we can do it better.
I'm sure. And, the notion that somehow, all of the obstacles to, cross-continent, pipeline, we're going to be overcome, which is, really very unlikely. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, look what it took to put the Transcontinental Pipeline in Alaska, where most of that landmass that was barren. Imagine trying to send one through Michigan, down through Kansas City, and all the way over to Phoenix.
Yeah, talk about the not in my backyard phenomenon.
Oh my goodness.
It would go through everybody's backyard.
Yeah, it would.
It's just not, I just don't think it's very likely. But, you know, what the problem is that some of our politicians, in an effort to exert ever more control over the Great Lakes or to, you know, reduce our, you know, access to water here in Michigan, make claims and scare people that this is somehow going to happen. And, you know, I think that that's really unfortunate.
Why do I have a fat gut? What's with me?
Because you eat more than you expend in energy. I mean,
that's simple.
You know, and it's no secret. It's no mystery. There's just no way around it. If we consume more calories than we expend, we're going to put weight on. And there's no way around it. You can't blame anybody else for it. You can't blame McDonald's. You know, you can't blame television commercials. You can't blame the fructose corn syrup industry. Really, the responsibility falls with us.
So why are we doing that, though? I mean, there's a lot, and I don't know if it's a majority or not. I'd like to get your thought on it, but my goodness, there is a movement. Sue the fast food. Sue the, I mean, you name the corn juice industry, corn soup, fructose industry. Ted Kennedy came out with something before his time, really, in the early 90s. I remember this got blown up real quick, but he was proposing FMOs, food maintenance organizations.
Where
you had to put out a card at the beginning of the year and declare that your two restaurants and three grocery stores you were going to shop at, and that's all you shopped at all year. And it's like, what?
You know, all these industries have deep pockets, and they're always targets for lawyers looking for, you know, fees. And people are attracted to the notion that, you know, whatever problems they may have is somebody else's fault. But it's not. It's, you know, every time you hand goes to mouth, that's a decision that we each of us make individually. And it's you know, a decision that we control. And so it's what is, you know, obesity is called a modifiable risk factor. You know, what that really means is that if you change your behavior, the problem will go away, or that the problem is some, you know, can be modified by your decision making. And, you know, as much as I would love to be able to blame some, you know, uncontrollable outside force for making me heavier than I should be, it's my fault. It's my fault. I put more food in my mouth than I expend, you know, in exercise or energy.
And that's really true, because, I mean, in the last 4 to 6 weeks, I guess, about 8 weeks, I guess, now, I've lost just over 30 pounds.
Good for you.
And I'm still way too much, and I still have a poochy belly. It's like I'm losing it everywhere but where I want.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because there are, you know, men and women tend to have different body characteristics in terms of where weight lands and, you know, how hard it is to take off. I mean, so there are, you know, there are challenges. The trick is not to get it there in the first place, of course. But this weight gain, this overall weight gain, it's not just the U.S. You know, Europe too. I mean, all across the world, there are many, many, many countries that have, you know, an increasingly heavier population. Some of it is a reflection of our wealth. That is, you know, we have lots more to eat, and we also have a lot more labor-saving devices. And those are not necessarily bad things. It's just in moderation. You know, it's a matter of you know, maintaining some moderation in taking advantage of both those labor-saving devices and in terms of, you know, this amazing abundance of food. I mean, even our pets are fat.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, but it is a sign of our relative well-being in many respects. And so I'm reluctant to look at this as something that is only dire. You know, I think there's a little bit of alarmism involved here because we saw the proportion of the population considered to be overweight jump by millions simply because, you know, the government changed the definition of what was overweight.
Well, I guess private industry's done the same thing. My goodness, the clothing industry. I mean, you talk to any woman out there, I mean, they've changed what all the sizes mean.
Well, yeah.
Don't go to a yard sale anymore trying to buy clothes, ladies. You'll get the wrong size for sure.
Right. And any woman who shops regularly knows that you can't trust the size anyway. I mean, different manufacturers have different size calculations, and so you always got to try it on anyway. But, you know, there are more, there certainly is, the market does respond. I mean, there are more larger size clothing choices than there ever were before, too. But, you know, it's interesting because there's been this long-held belief that any level of being overweight presents a health risk. And, in fact, some of the newest research is finding that, you know, people who are slightly overweight, not what used to be called morbidly obese, which is, you know, 30 or 40 more pounds over what you should be, you know, there are some health benefits, so that you're not necessarily, you know, most at risk if you're slightly overweight.
There's health benefits to being overweight?
They show that there are lower disease rates among people who are slightly overweight.
I had no idea.
Well, this is brand new, and this even came out after our article came out, so I couldn't include it in there. But
yeah,
there have been some stories recently.
You'll have to do something on that in a future issue. Tell you what, I've got to let you run because I'm just out of time, Diane, but real quick, somebody wants to get a copy of Michigan Science or learn more, how can we do that?
Email Diane, email katz@mackinaw.org. Or go to our website, which is mackinaw.org, and, you know, we welcome anybody to request copies.
Sounds fair enough. Good talking to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Diane Katz is the Director of Science, Environmental Technology Policy at the Mackinaw Center for Public Policy and WMBN and WMKT.